Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with veteran jazz pianist and composer Armen Danelian. His new 2022 CD, Fresh Start, is an epitaph for life as we escape COVID. He reemerges from the COVID-inspired shutdowns with this newly refined conception on both instrument and pen, and this is the recorded premiere of his new trio. He was classically trained at the Westchester Conservatory of Music in White Plains, New York. Since 1975, he has been very active. He's been a featured soloist and a band leader, and he's been around luminaries like the great Sonny Rollins, and he's been all over the world in international venues. He's got great insights. Enjoy this interview.
Well, hey, thanks for taking a minute out today to talk to Neon Jazz. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Sounds like the name of your new album, Fresh Start, something probably we could all use as we kind of reemerge and get back into the world.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of the idea.
Well, and I guess speaking of, how does this album feel coming out now with the prospects of being able to promote it and live music and the world's waking up?
It feels great. I'm so happy to be performing and recording with musicians of the caliber of Jay Anderson and Dennis McCrell. The compositions on the album relate in a way to my experience during the pandemic, really reevaluating and reexamining my approach to playing music, especially approach to playing the piano, because during the pandemic I practiced piano. I mean, with the fact that so many things fell through. But I over-practiced, and the result was that I injured my shoulder, believe it or not, and it required some physical therapy, and I had to stop playing the piano for like 3 months. So during that period, I was, pretty depressed and confused, but also doing a lot of composing, looking at, just how I was playing music and what my motivation was. And this has happened to me in the past, actually, at certain points where I was going through difficult periods. And I always go back to an experience I had when I was about 12 years old, when I first heard jazz played live. I knew immediately that that was the music that I wanted to do. At the time, I had been studying classical piano and also playing organ in church and getting involved in school plays, musicals, and so on. But when I heard jazz and the swing feel of jazz and the fact that, you could improvise without having to read music, I knew that that was something that I wanted to do more of. And so that has been my thing that I come back to, that feeling. During the pandemic, I had another opportunity to return to that inspiration and reevaluate what I was doing. And now putting this new recording out there, Fresh Start, to me feels like, around 39 or whatever you want to call it. Now that I'm a little bit older and a few things behind me, just looking at, where is it that I want to go in the next 5 or 10 years with my music? And, my approach to it has changed. One thing, of course, for obvious reasons, I'm more cognizant of my body and trying not to over force my touch at the piano, which caused this injury. But then at the same time, how do I relate to the other musicians, and can I bring the same attitude of awareness and gentleness to my connection with them, and also now with the audience? We're going to have an opportunity to do several concerts coming in the next few months, I'm looking forward to putting this new kind of approach to music out there and seeing what kind of response that I get.
I'm curious, when you talk about getting hooked on jazz, what was your first live jazz show that you witnessed that really inspired you?
Well, my older brother, John, who's since passed on, played clarinet, and at the time he was playing in I guess you could call it a Dixieland band. It was kind of a swing jazz group led by a man named Arthur Ryerson. And Mr. Ryerson was a guitarist and composer, arranger, played with Louis Armstrong and Paul Whiteman and many other musicians in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And his four kids were my peers growing up in high school, grade school and high school. And they had a family band that Mr. Ryerson led and arranged for. And my brother was playing in this band, and they played it at some, it was like a Methodist church bazaar, you know, where all the guests come and bring some food and share. And then they played Ain't She Sweet. It was one of the tunes that I remember. And Mr. Ryerson played a banjo and the four-string banjo, you know. I just remember he had a smile going from one ear to the other. and the thing swung so much because of the way he played. And so that was really my first exposure to live jazz. And then I'd also heard Marion McPartland play at a high school concert in my teens. And then I started listening to jazz records, Fats Waller, James P. Johnson, Bud Powell. So these were kind of like the seminal influences. And also I had an uncle who was a club date pianist, and he gave me a copy of the old number one fake book. Not the real book. Before the real book, there was the fake book. It was illegal to have one of these books, but he went to the union hall, and they sold this on the union floor, and he gave me a copy, and it had all the great old standards, going back to the 20s. That, in combination with my experience, and actually I got to play with Mr. Ryerson's band later on, when I was around 14. So we played some of these tunes from the fake book, and so it all started to come together for me. And but yes, that was the first show.
So as an educator, you know, you've been around a lot of players in your life, a lot of veterans and luminaries. What have you learned from all of the players around you, the veterans and luminaries, that you in turn have used to teach the students that you get around?
Oh, dear. Well, where do I begin? I have been fortunate to play and listen to so many great musicians. I'm having a hard time even beginning to answer that question because it's so enormous. Well, first of all, just the whole idea of self-expression, that, you know, jazz, of course, involves improvisation, and it gives the performer an opportunity to be self-expressive in a way that performers in other kinds of music may not have. In particular, I'm thinking about classical music, which is another stream of musical style that is very dear to me, and played a really important role in my early musical education. But at a certain point, I diverged from that, and because I just felt like there was not enough room for me to express myself. And so when I listened to and played with some of the great musicians that I have been fortunate to be with, that was one of the first things. Like I was mentioning earlier about Mr. Ryerson, the swing feel, the rhythmic feeling of jazz, completely different. And then just stamina, the musical stamina of some of the great musicians I play with. Someone like Sonny Rollins, whose band I belonged to in the late 70s. He just had enormous musical imagination and physical stamina playing the instrument. And then Billy Harper is another one who I played with for 4 years. Mongo Santamaria, with whom I played for 2 years, and played the congas, which is a very physically challenging instrument to play. you know, and it goes on and on. And then I guess, you know, the dedication that all of these musicians have had to their musical craft, and the work ethic that goes into playing their instruments, the whole idea of adversity and continuing through adversity in spite of the challenges. You know, jazz musicians, particularly African-American jazz musicians, have encountered a great deal of prejudice and bias in their careers. And so that strength, that inner strength that one has to have to play this music, is then a lesson to be learned by all musicians. And long and short of it, my musical mentors have taught me so much. I could go into more depth with you about, you know, particular musicians and, you know, technical things that I've learned. In a general nutshell, I think I've covered it right there.
So, yeah. You know, when we do kind of return more to the stage once COVID slows down, what do you hope we all realize about the power of live music? We've been away largely for about 2 years now.
The power of live music is, it's beyond words. Music has a way of expressing feelings that words cannot express. Audiences feel it, although they may not be able to express it either. But when I perform in front of an audience, I sense right away where they're at, and they sense where the musicians are at. Some audiences are more receptive to, you know, musical feeling than others, but generally, I think the truth is that people love to hear live music, and there's actually a need for them to hear live music, much more so than, you know, listening to music coming out of a speaker or some kind of device. There's something that is transmitted in a live performance that can't be captured in any other way. And this is true in other art forms as well. I mean, you know, you go to a dance concert, you go to a theater performance, or even a classical performance. There's a huge difference between listening to a piece of music on record and then hearing it live. You see the expression of the performers. You see the depth of communication between the players, and it's more than a visual element, although that certainly plays a role. But there's a just some kind of a vibe that you feel in the air in a live performance, and audiences need this, especially now. You know, coming out of COVID isolation, we've all been so cut off from each other, and I think people right now are really eager to taste that feeling again, I'm very positive about development of music in the coming months and years. Much like the Depression era in the 1930s, when there was so much adversity, it gave rise to such great music, composed and performed all the great show tunes that were composed in that era. It's the foundation of our jazz repertoire. So part of the reason I named the album Fresh Start is that I just have this positive feeling that, you know, well, this is an opportunity to, you know, kind of make a break from the past, from all the difficulties, and, you know, move into another approach, and I'm looking forward to getting in front of an audience again, and, you know, experiencing that firsthand.
So yeah. Everyone has a perception or an idea of who they think you are: your family, your friends, your fans, your students. But ultimately, you live your life. You have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
That's an interesting question. You know, I've been involved with meditation and yoga for well over 30 years. What I think I've learned from that is that I am a product of my conditioning, and yet there's an important part of me that is beyond all of that conditioning, that is really kind and really unspeakable in words, that I'm a witness to what it goes on in me and outside of me, but yet at the same time I'm a participant in it, and that I do make choices, and I have a role to play, and I do influence what other people do, and my choices have repercussions. I think who I am is the person that makes those choices, or the entity who makes those choices. I think given that there's an array of possibilities that one could engage in response to any given situation, that the choice that I make is a function of who I am. That being said, there are other situations where, you know, I might not have the presence of mind to make choices consciously, and that I respond almost instinctively or reflexively. Those reflexive choices are, again, part of who I am. They're a product of my conditioning, as I mentioned, but I might not be aware of that conditioning or of that reflex until after it's happened. I may surprise myself. I may be inspired by something that I do that I didn't realize I had the capacity to do. I might also be really disappointed in myself and wish that I had done something else. All of these responses to situations in life are part of who I am. So it's a rather complex question.
Well, and I think sometimes there's a notion of really delving into it, but sometimes there's a profundity, so to speak, and the brevity of it almost. And yeah, I think your answer was great. And I really appreciate you opening up about the album and your life and music, taking the time out. I look forward to presenting this music to my audience. So good luck with the album and the return to the stage. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you, and I hope your listeners enjoy the music.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Armen for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.